This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, the often deadly bad habit of distracted driving and how to keep teen drivers focused on the road. Joining me first in the studio for a review and analysis of yesterday's Kentucky primary results, our immediate past president of the Northern Kentucky Young Republicans and Young Women Republicans of Cincinnati Executive Board member, Sarah Cameron, Campbell County Democratic Party Chair and Northern Kentucky Forum Board member Linda Nesbitt, River City News editor and publisher Michael Monks, and Associated Press Kentucky Statehouse correspondent Adam Beam joins us by phone. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Linda, Michael, Sarah, and Adam, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Much appreciated. Adam, let's get your take on yesterday's primary.
Well, let's start at the top with the Democratic presidential primary between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. It was really a fascinating race. Hillary Clinton was, I think, expected to win the state easily for many months leading up to the primary, but she made some comments about putting coal miners and coal businesses out of business at a televised forum on CNN a few weeks ago. That really hurt her in the eastern portion of the state. I believe she lost every county in the eastern Kentucky that mines coal. And so that provided Senator Sanders with an opening, and he really campaigned hard. I believe the Associated Press has still not called this race officially, but Secretary Clinton has a very razor-thin margin over Senator Sanders right now. And you know, the effect of that is it doesn't really matter because the delegates are appointed proportionally. They're going to split them down the middle. But for Secretary Clinton, she needed to be able to win Kentucky, to say that she won it, so that she can kind of have that as momentum as she's going forward and trying to convince Senator Sanders to drop out of the race. Elsewhere, everybody else in the federal offices who was supposed to win did win. All of the incumbents who were running in the Senate primary and in the House primaries won, and the only open seat was in the first district where Jamie Comer, the former agriculture commissioner, had a decided advantage in fundraising. He had a decided advantage in name ID in that district where he's from. And he won by a good margin over three different challengers, including Michael Pape, who is a longtime aide to U.S. Representative Ed Whitfield.
Michael, your take on what happened yesterday?
Well, I think it's important to note that these voters in coal country were not necessarily voting for Bernie Sanders as much as they were voting against
Hillary
Clinton.
So you think that comment had a huge impact?
Well, I think certainly in the fall, these voters are the same voters who are going to be voting for Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton. This gave them a bonus opportunity to vote against her twice. I don't think that any objective person can look at Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and think that Bernie Sanders is not going to take a hardline approach on coal either. It's not that these coal country voters thought, well, Bernie Sanders would make a great president for coal mining counties. You know, instead, they said, look what Hillary Clinton said. We don't like Hillary Clinton. This is a chance for us to make her life a little bit more miserable. I think it had very little to do with support for Sanders. It's the same thing that happened in West Virginia when Bernie Sanders did pretty well there. But you had a third of his voters confess in the exit polls that they were going to be voting for Donald Trump in the fall.
Now, Hillary Clinton beat Bernie Sanders. It was 47% to 46%. And she edged him by, I think it was fewer than 2,000 votes. Linda, are you surprised that it was that tight yesterday?
I wasn't surprised. I actually thought it was going to be a very tight race. It ended up to be a little tighter than I anticipated. But I felt that with what had happened with Clinton's comments in the coal country, although they were taken a little out of context.
Well, she said they were a misstatement, I believe is what she said.
Well, and if you read the larger statement, it was made in the context of her overall energy plan and not necessarily a slam on coal miners and coal country. And she did try to clarify that, but by that time it was too late. So, again, I wasn't overly surprised. The margin was quite narrow, though.
Sarah, but what about you? Were you surprised that it was that tight?
You know, I wasn't surprised at all. And just to give you a little more background on me, I'm not originally from Northern Kentucky. I'm from Eastern Kentucky. I am from coal country. Mm-hmm. My dad lost his job 2 years ago after spending his entire life working for a coal company. He hasn't been able to find employment since. My dad is a lifelong Democrat. We do not have fun conversations about politics at my house when I'm home. That's actually not allowed. We're not allowed to talk about politics. However, I think to say that Hillary Clinton didn't mean what she said when she said she was going to put coal companies out of business is disingenuous. She is going to be a third term of President Barack Obama. And in 2008, Barack Obama himself promised to put coal companies out of business. He kept that promise.
Okay, so you're not going with the out of context, or that this was a misstatement.
No, absolutely not. You cannot. There is no evidence whatsoever that that is not what Hillary Clinton meant when she made those statements. Now, when she saw the backlash that she was going to get as a result of those comments, then she starts backtracking. But that's, you know, that's just political gamesmanship, and actually it plays with what you expect with Hillary Clinton. She says one thing, but she really means something else.
Well, you know, the nature of this, the dialogue that's beginning to take place here is so indicative of what's going on. So, first of all, to not acknowledge that the statement, which was very awkward, I'll certainly admit it was made within the context of a larger statement. And so Hillary Clinton does have a plan for coal country and coal miners. She's not going to leave them out in the cold. And if you would take the time to read that entire statement, I think you would need to acknowledge that. And also to backtrack and say that President Obama has put coal miners out of business, that is the height of being disingenuous. The coal country and coal industry has been in decline for as long as I've been an adult human being in Kentucky. So certainly EPA regulations come into play, but that is totally disingenuous.
And then let's go ahead and let's move on
okay.
this.
Okay.
Because I don't think we'll resolve anything with this.
We're not going to. Great idea, Mark.
But I am curious though, Linda, that you know there is this now tough competition going on between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton for the Democratic nomination.
Right.
How do you think that's going to affect the Democratic National Convention? How do you think it plays out there?
I think it is leaning in the direction of causing a lot of conflict, and I hope that that is tamped down soon before it gets completely out of control. I'm not fully aware of what transpired in Nevada and the convention there. I really need to read the background of that. But that was a state convention that got way out of hand. And I really think that Senator Sanders and party leadership need to get a handle on this. What we don't want is to go into the November election in a crippled, fractured state.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation today, you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Adam, the turnout yesterday for the election, how did that shape up?
It shaped up exactly as I think everybody thought it would. It was about 20%, to right under 21% statewide. Which is an average of the past three primaries that we've had here in Kentucky. I think on the Republican side, turnout might have been hurt a little bit because of the fact that there was no presidential primary on the ballot. As I think most people know, the Republicans divided up their delegates in a caucus back in March. That was an attempt to help Senator Paul run for re-election and to run for president at the same time. So they didn't have a president to vote for the draft turnout. And in many places, the only thing on the ballot for Republicans was either a House seat, a U.S. House seat, with not much money spent or time spent on that race. And so I think it kind of hurt the turnout in the Republican districts there.
Yeah.
Mark, following up on that, turnout was, as they expected, statewide with what Adam said, 20%. I think it's 20.65 is what the Board of Elections is reporting. But I think it's interesting for us to discuss today why turnout in Boone, Kenton, and Campbell was significantly lower than that. And just for our listeners' information, yesterday in Boone County, the turnout was 12.29%. And Campbell, 14.15. And in Kenton County, it was 14.12. So significantly lower than the rest of the state. And I think that's been a Northern Kentucky problem.
That is a common problem that a lot of politicians running statewide argue. One, it's hard to advertise in the Cincinnati media market. It's much more expensive than Louisville or Lexington or Western Kentucky TV stations. And two, although there are a lot of Republican voters up here, they don't often turn out as much for the statewide races.
Michael, how much do you think that, as Adam was saying, that the GOP caucus back in March had an effect?
A huge impact. Yeah. I mean, presidential races always drive higher turnout mm-hmm. every 4 years. So it put some local races, I think, at a disadvantage for people who thought they'd already cast the vote that's more meaningful to them this year instead of coming out and voting down ballot. So no question that I think it had a bit of an impact.
Yeah. And for me, as an example, I had one race to vote for or to vote on, and that was Rand Paul's race. So unless I felt really strongly, which I do, I like my perfect voting record, so I'm going to go no matter what I have to vote for. But, you know, you had to feel really strongly, I think, about that race to show up and cast that ballot.
I think that's true, and it was the same in Campbell. There were some local races on the ballot there, some city council, city commission races, but when I went to my polling location, I had two races, the presidential and the U.S. Senate primaries to vote in. So it does... create a little bit of a problem and a challenge. And I think also Northern Kentuckians, just in general, same old story, feel a little bit removed, a little isolated from the rest of the state. And that continues to be a challenge for candidates and really for everybody who works in this arena.
Linda, as far as Northern Kentucky has always been a Republican stronghold in the state, do you think that the number of Democrats in Northern Kentucky is starting to grow?
I don't know about that. I think each party has grown a little bit. The Republicans have certainly outmaneuvered us and outperformed us in terms of voter registration. In Campbell County now, I believe the difference is just a little bit less than 3%. And it's only been within the last couple of years that Republican registration has overtaken Democrats. So that's something we need to do. We need to reach out to new people and try to bring them into the fold and get them registered and convert them into voters.
Are we starting to see a presence at this point from the candidates for federal office? Are we starting to see them set up offices? Have they set up offices in Northern Kentucky?
I don't know if Senator Paul has set up an office or not, but I know that moves are being made to do that and to schedule times where he can come and visit with the constituents up here. I mean, he's taking this race very seriously.
Right, and I've not heard the same for the Gray campaign, although I would expect that to be an option down the line. I don't know how quickly that might materialize, but I would expect it to as well.
We will continue our review of yesterday's Kentucky primary, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Haney, and joining me with analysis of yesterday's Kentucky primary results are immediate past president of the Northern Kentucky Young Republicans and Young Women Republicans of Cincinnati executive board member Sarah Cameron, Campbell County Democratic Party chair and Northern Kentucky Forum board member Linda Nesbitt, River City News editor and publisher Michael Monks, and Associated Press Kentucky Statehouse correspondent Adam Beam. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Adam, Governor Bevin has had as a goal and as part of his wish list converting the Kentucky House to GOP control. Did he see any progress on that particular wish yesterday?
Well, yesterday was sort of a dress rehearsal for that, because we've got all the races set for the fall about who's going to be challenging who. And, you know, I think 2 years ago, the Republicans, they didn't really have the best candidates that they could have lined up to run against some of those seats. They didn't challenge a lot of incumbents that they could have, especially in eastern Kentucky. And this year, they've done a much better job of making sure they have enough people to challenge in those seats. And I think they've got some reasons to look forward to these races coming up in the fall. In particular, I think there's a lot of people that are excited about Wendy Fletcher. She won primary in District 99 in eastern Kentucky, and that's held by House Majority Floor Leader Rocky Adkins. The Republicans are very excited about her. I think they're also excited about District 94 in Pike County. This was held by Leslie Combs for such a long time. And they got a former mayor of Pikeville, Frankie Justice, who's
my cousin, actually.
That's a disclosure on Sarah's part.
That is a disclosure. I am definitely voting for him. I mean, well, I'm not voting. My family will be, of course.
Well, and, you know, Eastern Kentucky was, you know, such a Democratic stronghold for so long. And then, you know, Senator McConnell won a lot of those counties for the first time ever in 2014. I think Republicans see some big opportunities out there. And then, of course, on the Democratic side, you know, you've got some really interesting races. You know, starting with Denver Butler in Louisville, you know, he surprised everybody when he switched. He was a Democrat. He comes from a longtime Democratic family. He switched to the Republican Party. He's from a very Democratic district, and they've got Mackenzie Cantrell, who won, an attorney in Louisville, won the primary to face him. So it'll be interesting now that the Democrats are going to be trying to take out a guy that used to be one of their own.
And if I might add to that, the Democrats were successful, and we realize it's a very competitive and sometimes a very challenging environment, but the Democrats were successful in winning three of the four special House races back in March and actually picked up a seat and increased the majority there. So it's going to be an interesting election season for sure, and we'll have to see what happens there.
I'd like to follow up on what Adam said about the Republicans having, I guess, starting out of the gate in a stronger foot in 2016 mm-hmm. now. And a lot of that has to do with Representative Jonathan Schell of the 71st House District. And I know that was a race that everyone was watching really closely because I think a former judge executive was running against him and Buzz Karloftis. Anyway, that race turned out that Jonathan Schell got in that district 80% of the vote. So what a great stamp of approval from that district. And I think the GOP has a lot of thanks to go to Representative Jonathan Schell for the team that he's put up against the Democrats coming up in 2016 as to the House.
Sarah, how aware are Northern Kentucky voters about what goes on at the State House? How much do they really recognize the names of state lawmakers and pay attention to those particular races?
Well, I can speak for myself and my group. So you introduced me as the immediate past president of the Northern Kentucky Young Republicans, and as in that position, I'm still very involved. And as an organization, we try to bring people up from other parts of the state, other House members, such as Jonathan Schell, to come up and meet with our members so that we do feel more connected to what's going on in Frankfort. As Linda says, you know, that's a problem, an ongoing problem that we have. Are we more associated with Cincinnati or are we more associated with Frankfort? So my organization is trying to build that connection.
Yeah, and I could chime in and agree with that as well. And we try to do the same thing. It is kind of hard, for Northern Kentuckians to stay in the loop about state business. So Michael does a great job with his publication. We have a couple other online newspapers, if you will. But as we all know, some of the news media have kind of backed off from Northern Kentucky coverage and state coverage in general. So it is a little difficult to stay abreast. And I think that plays a part in the low turnout that we see.
No question that Northern Kentucky's identity crisis is traced directly to its lack of a strong media presence. And
right.
I say that as the owner of a media company, but we're pretty new. I mean, we're about to be 5 years old, but we're just now sort of expanding into the suburbs. So the identity crisis that Northern Kentucky feels, whether it's part of Cincinnati, whether it's part of Frankfort, whether Louisville or Lexington cares about it at all, it's all directly tied to the fact that you never even hear media outlets say Northern Kentucky.
Right. Well, and I know that we're talking about other parts of the state, but you don't have to go to other parts of the state to have a contested House seat. I think Linda mentioned it earlier, the 64th House District, which is mm-hmm. parts of Kenton County mostly Kenton County and I think two precincts in Campbell.
Correct.
So we had primaries in that seat yesterday, mm-hmm. and so that's going to be a contest in November.
Right.
The Republicans are really excited about who we have in running for that seat. Mark, you may not be aware, that is Tom Kerr. Tom Kerr has been in the House, I think, for almost over 30 years.
Since 1985.
And yes. So he's retiring. So yes. That seat is open. And the Republicans have Kim Moser. She's a mother of five a former neonatal nurse and former director of the Office of Drug Policy, a super strong candidate for that office in November. And we're really excited and proud of the work that she accomplished yesterday.
Right. And the Democrats yesterday nominated a young man named Lucas Deaton. He is a council member in Independence, a young attorney. Has a lot of involvement going on in the community, and we think that he'll be a strong candidate. This will be an uphill battle. It's a predominantly Republican district, but I think Lucas will do very well.
It's a seat that's held by a Republican named Tom Kerr, and the last time it was held by a Democrat, it was by a Democrat also named Tom Kerr. Switched parties about 12 years ago.
Right. I had forgotten that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Let's talk with Rob in Dayton, Ohio. Hi, Rob.
Hi. Good afternoon. I had a quick question for Adam. At the top of the program, he mentioned that he felt as if the Sanders votes, particularly in eastern Kentucky, were really anti-Clinton votes, and these are folks who will be voting for Trump come the fall. If I understand the Kentucky primary process properly, wouldn't these all have been pre-declared and pre-registered Democrats who were voting? How do we figure those are going to end up in the Trump column in November?
Okay.
Well, that's been
okay.
I'm sorry. That's been a kind of a long time tradition here among the conservative Democrats in Kentucky. That's why we do pretty well in the registration column, but when it comes to election time, we're often on the short end of the stick. People have not re-registered from Democrat to Republican, but yet vote Republican, particularly in the presidential elections.
Adam, did you want to weigh in since that was something you were talking about earlier?
Sure. I don't think that was me.
That was me.
Was that Michael?
That,
okay.
Yeah. And so I think the evidence is clear. You can look at the landslide victory that Hillary Clinton had over Barack Obama in the 2008 mm-hmm. primaries, only to see Barack Obama then walloped by Mitt Romney in the state. And this is a state that has voted Democrat in presidential elections past. They went for Clinton both times, for example, went for Carter, mm-hmm. but, well, once. And then the past couple of elections went against Obama.
I mean, voters are voting their values. I mean, they might be like my dad. He's been a Democrat his entire life. He doesn't associate with the policies of federal Democrats. That's different from him. So he's much more likely to vote Democratic on a local level, and then he's going to vote on his values when it comes to federal elections.
If you need any proof of that, just look at the state Senate primary in Pike County with Ray Jones. He's a Senate minority leader. He faced a challenge, a very contentious race out there, and both of them were running what looked like Republican campaigns. They were running all about who was more conservative and who could get furthest away from President Obama.
You could see that in the U.S. Senate primary on the Democratic side. And Jim Gray, the Lexington mayor, was the runaway winner. He's more of a establishment
Democrat. Yeah, he was in
Democrat.
A seven-way race, and he got 59%
That's
of
right.
the vote out of a seven-way race.
An absolute rout. And I think what people expect, who people believe to be his top challenger, was a younger candidate named Celis Wilder, a former Frankfort city commissioner, who openly ran in support of Bernie Sanders, who talked about the values that progressive Kentuckians should express on the campaign trail, a direct affront to some of the rhetoric that you would hear from the campaigns of Alison Lundgren Grimes and her failed 2014 bid and Jack Conway's failed 2015 gubernatorial bid. And he got wiped out.
And Mark, you asked me at the outset if I was surprised by yesterday's results, and that was the big surprise to me. I thought that Celis Wilder in particular would do much, much better. And as a progressive Democrat, I was a little dismayed by that, actually. Not to take anything away from Mr. Gray. I've met him several times. I've heard him speak. Very, very nice man and brings a lot to the table in terms of his vision for the future of Kentucky. But again, I thought that Wilder and also Ron Leach would run a little bit stronger in Kentucky throughout the state.
It is important to note, I think, that Jim Gray is openly gay. So the Democrats of Kentucky have nominated an openly gay man to be their nominee against Rand Paul in the fall.
I think Jim Gray's biggest issue is going to be getting away from the fact that his first vote when he gets to the United States Senate will be for Harry Reid, a liberal Democrat who has said coal makes you sick. I mean, mm-hmm. that's going to be his first
vote. So the coal issue comes up again.
The coal is going to come up again. And on top of that, he's a liberal Democrat. I mean, as far left as you can get, basically. And as we just discussed, that's not the policies that are resonating with Kentucky voters.
Well, I guess this will be a test of the values of Kentucky voters and whether or not they can get past the idea that a gay person is running for the United States Senate, just as they were not able to get past the idea of a black man running for president or in the United States. So I think that is it's a test of values. And
you both would agree on that. You're both saying this is a test of values.
Yeah, it's a test of values. I'm not going to say that's going to be the primary issue. And personally, I hope it's not the primary issue. What I hope that voters vote on is do you want government? Do you want widespread government waste? Do you want the federal government reaching into your personal lives? That's what I hope voters vote on. And I think that Kentucky voters are going to say no.
Real quick, your thoughts on how Northern Kentucky is going to vote in the presidential race in November.
Trump gets Boone, Trump gets Kenton, gets Campbell in overwhelming numbers.
Trump will win. It's interesting that Ted Cruz won all three primaries or caucuses here, but I'm pretty sure that Kenton, Campbell, and Boone will go for Mr. Trump in the fall. Wish it were different. I wish I could say otherwise, but I have to be honest with that.
And I have to agree. I just don't see how there's any way that this goes to Hillary Clinton.
Adam, what's your sense?
On who wins Kentucky?
Northern Kentucky, Kentucky, however you want to approach it, since you're our statewide guy.
I think Donald Trump would carry the state. I understand the argument that Hillary Clinton has some appeal here and might be able to make some inroads here. But I just think you look at the history, the state's been trending red for a long time. It's going to be difficult for a Democrat to beat a Republican here.
Mm-hmm. Michael, real quick, Covington mayor's race. That's been interesting from the start. Four people. We're down to two now.
Northern Kentucky politics are awesome, but there's no politics in Northern Kentucky like Covington City Hall. And it's going to be a lot of fun come the fall. A challenger knocked off the incumbent in the primary, but it's really just round one. Now these two will face each other in the fall. The incumbent mayor, Sherry Caron, has 6 months to get her act together against a very strong campaign being run by former state senator Joe Meyer, who also served in Governor Beshear's administration. They've got a very strong campaign, and he came out ahead by about 8 points over her in a four-way race. So the turnout in Covington was actually much higher than the rest of the region because people are very motivated in this mayor's race and people are very motivated for the city commission race.
What happened with that commission race?
So what it looks like in the commission race is that in the mayor's race, change came out ahead, but the two incumbents seeking re-election came out ahead in the commission race. So there was change and status quo that both received some support yesterday. But there was also a former city commissioner who was ousted from office 2 years ago trying to get her seat back. She finished third, which is in the money as well. You got to finish in the top four in November to be elected in Covington. Eight advanced yesterday. So that's what was interesting to watch was that both incumbents finished in the top two. One who was voted out of office last time was right back neck and neck with them, led most of the night. She's in there. And newcomer Timothy Downing finished fourth. He's from South Covington, which is a big voting block in the city. This is going to be a huge campaign to watch. I also noticed that some of the candidates who barely made it through the primary, namely Robert Horine, the former Campbell County administrator and Covington city official, these are people who realized, I think, last night that they've got some work to do. They were surprised at how poorly they performed in the primary. So those of you who live in Covington and are listening, you can expect your door to be knocked on many more times than it was in the primary, without question. And the same is true for Sherry Caron. And I think she got a wake-up call yesterday.
Well, it was 47-40. That's exactly right. For Joe Meyer. So.
Yeah. And Michael, I don't want to go without mentioning our top vote-getter in the commissioner race.
Your good friend, young Republican, Jordan Huizenga.
Jordan Huizenga.
Sarah had to get that.
And an exciting young person. I think his heart's in the right place, and he has worked so hard. So I was so excited to see that he finished in the top.
He did, number one on the ballot.
Well, Adam, Linda, Michael, and Sarah, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Immediate past president of the Northern Kentucky Young Republicans and Young Women Republicans of Cincinnati executive board member Sarah Cameron, Campbell County Democratic Party chair and Northern Kentucky Forum board member Linda Nesbitt, River City News editor and publisher Michael Monks, and Associated Press Kentucky State House correspondent Adam Beam. The Scripps Howard Center for Civic Engagement at Northern Kentucky University will present the next in its Northern Kentucky Forum Cafe series, Unpacking the Primary. That's going to be May 26th at the Campbell County Public Library in Newport. And you can find a link to information about that event at WVXU.org. Coming up, we'll hear about programs to teach teens about the dangers of distracted driving. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.